Welcome to the Right Take Podcast, news, ideas, and conversations at the intersection of politics and culture, a project of the David Horowitz Freedom Center. I will be your host, Mark Tapson. Greetings, and welcome back to the Right Take Podcast. I am your host, Mark Tapson. We are now on the cusp of the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. We're about to celebrate the freest, most prosperous nation in the world and in the history of the world. And meanwhile, the Democrat Party accelerates toward changing its name to the Democratic Socialists of America as it veers even farther left than it already was. And by Democratic Socialists of America, I mean the Communist Party. Communism doesn't sound as palatable as democratic socialism, but that's what it is. Just as progressivism sounds nice, but it's just rebranded communism. And communism is where the Democrat Party is headed, as the radicals increasingly marginalize the already far left but relatively centrist members of the party, who were too terrified of the young radicals to try to rein in their blatant totalitarianism. So what does that mean for America for the next 250 years? Are we going to move toward a new era of liberty and prosperity and international preeminence? Or is the specter of communism going to cast a dark shadow over the future? My guest today is someone who grew up in one of the darkest eras of communist evil, managed to escape it and come to America, only to find concerning parallels here with the Maoist cultural revolution she experienced in China. She has been a true American patriot for four decades and is committed to sounding the alarm for the rest of us that our freedom is not only not guaranteed, but is fragile and threatened by subversive forces within the nation itself who are hell-bent, literally, on imposing communism in never-ending pursuit of their dream of engineering the perfect society. As I've often said and written, utopian dreams always lead to dystopian nightmares. The Founding Fathers knew 250 years ago that human beings are fallen and imperfect, and that only liberty for a responsible moral citizenry leads to prosperity and real social progress for all. That understanding of human nature is the foundation of the conservative philosophy, and it is directly opposed by the collectivist perspective of communists, who are now in the process of clinching control of one of the two major parties in American politics. What will this mean for the next 250 years of America? Will there be another 250 years? That is not a settled question anymore, as things stand today. And we have to balance our jubilation as we celebrate Independence Day with the stark realization that we are engaged in what I've called many times a hot civil war with an enemy determined to burn America to the ground in order to build utopia on its ashes. My guest today is acutely aware of that and has committed her life to warning us and fighting back in defense of the country that she and all true patriots love. So stay tuned. You don't want to miss this conversation. And don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you don't already, so that you don't miss any of the compelling conversations we're having here. Don't touch that dial. My guest today at the intersection of politics and culture is author and activist Xi Van Fleet. She has lived in the U.S. for 40 years, but was born in China and grew up during Chairman Mao's infamous Cultural Revolution of the late 60s and early 70s. She's written a book called Mao's America, A Survivor's Warning, which details her concerns that the Cultural Revolution she witnessed in China is being replayed here in her adopted homeland of America. I cannot recommend the book highly enough. I had her on the podcast a couple of years ago to discuss it, and now she has a new book, which we're going to talk about today. Xi Van Fleet, welcome back to the Right Take Podcast.
Well, thank you so much for having me back.
Before we get to your new book, I want to talk to you about an article you wrote for Breitbart.com recently, just in time for the 250th birthday of the United States. But even before we get to that, please, if you would, give us a little recap of your story, of your journey from the China of Chairman Mao to America.
Yeah, that's a long story, but I have to make it really short. Yes, and I was born in 1959, the beginning of Mao's Great Famine, three-year Great Famine that killed up to 50 million Chinese peasants. And even though I don't have memory. I was too young, but I heard a lot from my mother and from, you know, people who experienced it. So when I was seven, that is the beginning of the Cultural Revolution. So here I have to say, this year is so special. It's 250th anniversary for our the founding of our nation. Also, it is the anniversary of me being here for 40 years, coming to America, 40. And also the 60 years anniversary for the Cultural Revolution, which started in 1966.
Yes.
So back to my my story. So I was in my first grade. And so it lasted for 10 years until Mao's death. And that was my youth, basically. You know, by the time I graduated from high school, I was 17. And I experienced everything, and then I was sent to the countryside to work in the field for 3 years. In 1986, I was able to come to America to pursue my graduate study, and eventually married my husband and stayed and become American citizen. So here I want to really want to tell the story is that I came here with the absolutely misunderstanding that freedom is a given. I thought I just escaped communism, I will be okay for the rest of my life and, you know, live happily ever after. And that is a mistake I made. I think a lot of people like me probably had the same kind of thinking. And so I was not paying attention to politics. I thought that's someone else's job.
Yes.
Yeah, eventually I noticed things that started to remind me of the Cultural Revolution back home in my childhood or my youth. But it took 2020. It took the BMM Marxist Revolution for me to say I cannot stand as observer anymore. And then I got involved and I joined the local Republican committee and then went to the school board of Loudoun County parents meeting, and where I gave like a just 1 minute of comment on what's going on in school. They're pushing CRT and all that. Mm-hmm. And that went viral. And I kind of like feel like I kind of like a become an activist by accident. But since then, you know, I tell people I had been silent for 30 some years, and now no one can shut me up. That's all I do now, talking about the danger of communism and its a threat to our country.
Yes, I was like you. There was a time in my life when I paid no attention to politics either. I thought, well, that's someone else's job. But as they say, you may not care about politics, but politics cares about you. So ultimately, you find out you have to get involved one way or another. When you moved here, you began to see these parallels with what you experienced, what the Cultural Revolution wrought in China. Under the Trump administration, over the last couple of years or so, since you've written that first book, do you see those echoes of the Cultural Revolution being rolled back any at all, or are they still very much threats?
No, it's still pretty much threat because it took decades for them to get here, but it's a rollback. I absolutely think that's the case. And one thing I tell you that when I started in, that was 2021, and I started to talk, and I started to have interviews, and I started to use the word communism, and I was advised, even by my husband, said, don't say that word, say Marxism, because Mark Levin said, he just published his book, American Marxism.
All right.
Marxist. And he said, you know, people think about the Cold War, people think about Soviet Union, which was no more. But I said, it is communism because that's my experience. And what's going on here remind me of my experience in communist China. So I keep using it. But today, everyone uses it.
That's right.
So and I think that is because people realize, people make the connection between communism and woke. And so I think that is a great progress. And so we have to get the word right because woke is communism, progressive is communism. Today, even the Democrat, communist Democrat, are worried because the most radical communists threaten to take over their party. And so I think that is the progress. In 2020 and 2021, a lot of people just never make that connection. They thought that's something new. Okay, woke is something good, something new. No, it's something that has happened many times, and it destroyed countries, destroyed people's lives. And now I think more and more people make that connection. And that's great.
You're right. That is progress. And the late David Horowitz used to say that all the time, that progressivism is nothing but rebranded communism. So
absolutely. Absolutely. Liberal, they took all this wonderful sounding terms and to cover the ugly inside, which is communism. Bloody, violent, evil communism.
Exactly right. And what behavioral or structural parallels, like cancel culture, for example, do you find in America today that concern you the most?
Today, they wrote back. See, and they took down all these statues, and but DEI is cancel culture, you know. So it's change forms. They always do that. They push something to the extreme. When people start to react, they change forms. Why it's cancel culture? Because it canceled the foundation of this country. It's liberty and meritocracy. Meritocracy is liberty because it. Depend on the individual making the effort and achieve their own goal. But now the government has taken over. The government and said this group and that group deserve privilege.
Yes.
They talk about privilege, but that's what they give it to the groups. Okay, because this group is designated as the oppressed group, then they need handout. Not even hand out, you know, like just free stuff, but also promotion, like a position of power they want to give to those people. That is cancel culture, cancel the foundation of this country. So it's change forms. And I think that's something that people have to understand. Communism, Marxism, they change their tactics all the time, but the essence always remain the same. It's always about control, about power, and about division, about using one group of people to go against the other. But the final goal, really, their ultimate goal is to take down this country and shatter our foundation so that they can be ruled by a small group of people. And that's communism.
And collective identity is a collective group identity is really part of that process too. A very powerful part of your story is this relief that you felt upon arriving in America and being treated as an individual instead of as a label or a part of a collective. But then you begin to see identity politics on the rise here, and that's a shift from individual rights to collective group identity, replacing or attempting to replace the heart of the American dream, isn't it?
This is absolutely the story that people should pay attention to. When I got here, I shedded my label, my collective identity, which is that I am the granddaughter of a landowner, and which is automatically put in the category of what they call the black class, the enemy of the state. It doesn't matter what I did, or it doesn't even matter that I never even saw the land that they took, the confiscated. Doesn't matter because it's a collective guilt. Because my grandparents own some land, my father becomes the son of the landowner. I become the granddaughter of the grandowner of the landowner. So we are categorically, despite of our individual effort or individual thought or the individual understanding of anything, doesn't matter. You become enemy. And come here, I'm free. I'm just a person, just an individual. I love it so much. And soon I found out, no. I become the oppressed class because, okay, I'm, you know, Asian and Chinese. Yeah. And soon enough, I found out no more because we are now, especially Chinese, categorized as white adjacent.
Right.
It's because we are so successful. We
exactly.
no longer fit their narrative. And this to me, my goodness, what a journey from part of the collective and becoming individual and back to the collective. That is why I really want to sound alarm to American people. This is absolutely communist ideology that's taken over our country.
Exactly right. Okay, this article that you wrote for Breitbart is called One Ideal, Two Revolutions. And I thought it was just beautifully stated. Could you give us a little overview of that piece?
Yes, and people, you know, when people understand what communism is, they know that communism always use the best language to describe their revolution. And in China, it's called liberation. Liberation of the oppressed, of the right. poor, and of the liberation, everyone from the unjust system. They call the old society, and created what? Create a utopia. We're told we're going to be living in a society that is no oppression, no exploitation, no unfairness. Everything will be just beautiful and perfect, and then what? And then we all ended up experiencing hell.
Yes.
And so, but in America, they also want to, the American Revolution, they also promise something. They also promise the new order, but it's not a utopia. It's not. And then the foundation was that we're all created equal. Our rights are from God, from our creator. And that is it. They never promise a perfect world because yes. the perfect world does not exist on earth. And that's the difference.
Yep.
And so nowadays, the communists or the radicals always compare America to this so-called perfect world, mm-hmm. the communist utopia. And they found that there are still poor people here in America. There's still racism, however they defined it. Mm-hmm. And then the conclusion is, this system is unjust and has to be destroyed, has to be replaced throughout, through revolution. So I think it's important for people to understand. When communists took over China, they did not say, we're going to kill millions of people, we're going to starve you. No, they're going to liberate us.
Yes.
They're going to lift us up to what? To something that is absolutely just utopia. Utopia means it just doesn't exist.
Yeah, that is a great point. And the dystopian nightmare that communism always brings about is precisely the result of their attempt to engineer utopia. It stems precisely from that urge to create a perfect society, which, as you point out, the founding fathers never claim to be attempting to create. And because of that, you emphasize in your piece that the American system is uniquely built for self-correction and renewal. And I think that makes all the difference in terms of our liberty and versus communism. What actions can everyday people take today to activate that kind of self-corrective mechanism?
I think, first of all, I believe history is the key. And how do we correct? We are always, as a society, and we always correct ourselves. And that's why they need to know the history. They need to know that we had slavery, and what happened? We corrected. We got rid of slavery. And then we absolutely trying, not saying that we always reach to the perfection. No, we're trying to really make sure that the liberty is applied to everyone, including people who were historically disadvantaged. And now the people who absolutely benefit from that still, I think they still believe they're slaves. And in Juneteenth, I saw videos of people, I think in churches, in African American churches, they put themselves in chain and they reenact slavery.
Yes.
And that is the danger. It's like you don't know history. How we started with the lofty goal to make liberty that apply to everyone. And we are moving fast forward to that goal. And do we ever going to achieve perfection? No, it's not possible. But that's what not they look at it, because they believe communist utopia. So I would say that it's been improved all the way along. Probably sometimes it's gradual, sometimes it's not gradual, like the Civil War, it's not gradual. It's through a violent war that we ended slavery. But I just reject that we are not self-correcting, we're not improving. Progressive should apply to conservatives. We are making progress. We are always making progress. The progressive, the word they use now is taking us to what they believe is a utopia. We'll never get there. And in the process, they want to destroy our country.
In your article, you also make the great point that the fundamental difference between the outcomes of the American and Chinese revolutions lies in their foundations, biblical principles versus Marxism. How does religion and biblical principles, how do those make all the difference in terms of liberty versus totalitarianism?
I really truly believe that every nation, there's no nation that built on nothing. They build on a belief system. And you can call it secular or you can call it religious, but I think there is no such thing as secular belief system. They all eventually become some kind of a religion. So communism is a religion. Yes, it's absolutely a religion. And so in America, it's built on this biblical worldview. And that is just boiled down to we are created equal by our Creator, and our rights are from our Creator. That changes everything. That actually determines everything else. It determines the role of the government, it determines the role of an individual. The government is just, their job is to protect those rights. And the individual is has the right, God-given right, to have life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. That's it. It's very, very simple. Everything else is a manifestation of those principles. In China, in a communist country, the government is the God, and the rights, our rights is from the government. And that changes everything. So the government can decide what is right for you, what is not. And the government, in pursuit of its so-called utopia, it's justified for them to kill millions, because their goal is always for the good of the people, always. And that's why I hate the word people so much, because growing up, we have People's Republic of China, people's money, renminbi, people's commune, which I spent my 3 years laboring in the field, and people's court, people's liberation army, it's all people. And we people are slaves. In America, we the people are actually the people who select or vote in a government that we think represent us. We are absolutely should be in control, even though that's eroding so much since the Declaration of Independence. But that's the fundamental difference of people, what they really are. In their the country that founded in the different kind of a foundation. I don't know whether I explained it.
No, that you explained it very well. Okay, I don't want to neglect your new book, so let me get to that. It's called Made in America, The Hidden History of How the United States Enabled Communist China and Created Our Greatest Threat. And it starts with Aesop's fable of the farmer and the snake. Could you talk about how that illustrates this century-long relationship between the United States and the CCP, the Chinese
Communist Party? Yes, this is a book that a lot of Americans, this is the piece of history that so many Americans never learned because it's never taught. And so nowadays, I think more and more people do realize that Communist China is one of our greatest threats. But they don't know how that threat came about. Yeah. And how was it possible, really, in 1921, and a group of people that they founded the Communist Party, about 50 of them. And who were they? They were professors of Beijing University and the students of those professors. That's it. And in 27 years, that party took over China and ruled China since then, since 1949, and now threatened to take over America. How could that be just even possible? If you read the story, you know it is possible because the United States.
Yes.
And knowingly or unknowingly, it was the United States that made all that possible. And still people don't even know the history. And I went back to the beginning Woodrow Wilson. And so I got feedback from people who are really readers. I got one person and he reads all sorts of books. He said, I can't believe that I don't know this piece of history.
Yeah, that's a great aspect of your book. It really is. I love that you delved into the history of it.
Yeah. So this the snake, who is the snake? CCP. And who is the farmer? It's the United States. And so you can't blame the CCP for what they do. It's a snake. That's its nature. But it's us who make the same mistake. I mean, almost identical mistake over and over and over. And so that is not it, because the result is they helped to create this external threat. But it's the same lack of understanding of communism, or some of them, they know exactly what they're doing, that is threatening us today. And that's why I think this book is important. And you really to understand the same thing now is threatening America. I always say, okay, you can complain. You know, the CCP is they send pregnant women to United States and then get a birth certificate, whatever. Mm-hmm. They do it. They absolutely do it. But we allow them to do it.
Yes, and speaking of the history of this process, how did progressive Western journalists contribute to sanitizing the CCP's image for American readers?
I know. That we have to go back to the very first one. He still remains the most influential person, and his name is Edgar Snow. Hmm. And he was a journalist in China in late 20s and early 30s. And he was the one, actually, his book, Red Star Over China, is still considered the origin story of the CCP. And he really portrayed the CCP as early Christians. And he portrayed Mao as a Christ-like person. And why? Because he was a liberal himself.
Yes.
He was a progressive himself. That's why I want to really show that the progressiveness and communism and the leap is very small. It's the difference is so small. Mm-hmm. And they actually, that's why he sees everything from his progressive lens, that CCP represent the hope of China. And so he called them not really communists. They were just agrarian reformers. Do we hear the same thing later after Nixon? Those are not really communists. Yeah. They are reformers. And even Reagan fell for that crap, you know, even though he was a staunch anti-communist and helped to bring down the Soviet Union. But he even fell for it. Oh, those are Chinese communists. They are not really communists. They are so-called communists. That's what Reagan called them, so-called communists. But here's the thing. Look at the history. By the time that Nixon visited China, up to 80 million Chinese are already dead. Dead because of starvation, persecution, and it's there. The history is there. But Kissinger said, we really don't care what the people do, the government do to their own people. We just want to make sure that the that have a relationship with that country fits our interest.
Yes.
I don't know what kind of interest that is. How can you have alliances with a country that kill millions, tens of millions of its people?
Yes. Another thing in your book that I think a lot of people, most people maybe, don't know about is the CCP's magic weapon, the United Front strategy. What is that strategy and how is it being deployed today against America?
Yeah, and I did explain that strategy, United Front, it was invented by Lenin. It is really, you can call it an influence tool, or infiltration tool. Mm-hmm. It really, United sounds kind of nice, and it's not United. It's get your enemy disarmed so that you can infiltrate and eventually not only influence, but take over them. And yes. they did it in China to the Nationalist Party. They used the that strategy twice. The result is the Nationalist government was defeated and driven to Taiwan. After that, they said, this is magic. This really works. So they now they deployed it to overseas. And America is really one of the main target, and they do the same thing. They say, you know, we just want to understanding. You know, we have a Confucius Institute. We just want to help American young people to understand the great civilization of China, and then we will pay for everything. And then they get in, and what they do, they absolutely it's a propaganda machine. Once you get there, you get the money, you hook to the money, you let them do, you let the Confucian Institute do. Once you get there, you can't talk about Taiwan, you can't talk about Tibet, you can't talk about Uyghur, you cannot talk about the problems of the Communist Party, and the freedom of speech is dead. And not only dead in the Confucius Constitution, and Confucius Institute, but also they push it outward to the campus as in general. That's why you get a lot of people who never even understand it. They speak for the CCP, and it's because the United Front tactic that works so well. This time they have money. They have the capitalist money to support all this infiltration operations. And they use the same thing to control the Chinese diaspora and just say, you know, you're here in America, but your loyalty should be to your motherland. And the motherland is not the motherland. The motherland is the party. That's what they do. And they capture the elites. They capture people like, you know, so many. I mean, I mentioned some in the book. I mean, one of them is Mitch McConnell.
Oh, Mitch McConnell, yes.
Yeah, and his wife. The money is from the CCP. Hmm. It's from the Chow family. And once you get millions, tens of millions of dollars from the CCP, you think that would not change your position on CCP? And that's how they do it. So by now, I don't know. I think that most of the elites were somewhat captured. And then the tactic is a United Front.
What about America's infrastructure? How vulnerable, you know, things like food security and supply chains, how vulnerable is America's infrastructure to the CCP's long-term strategies like the United Front?
Yeah, now we heard a lot of this about they really want to undermine our food supply. Like they brought in all this only two were caught bringing what you call pathogens for plants that will destroy the crops. And whatever they do, they want to make sure that America is undermined so that they will have a better chance to become the number one superpower. So it's not just food, it's everything, infrastructure for energy and whatever. Now I heard a lot of things about, what's his name, Singhin, that pushing out this... narrative that data center is bad for America, but good for CCP. So it's everywhere. We should think about, you know, like we handed out. Again, I think the enemy is within. We handed out everything to China. Now we depend on even on the basic things like basic medicines.
Yes,
and that is absolutely threatening our security and national security. So almost like there's nothing that CCP overlooked. If they can use anything, they will, to undermine our country.
And the export of fentanyl, for example, and the cover-up of the Wuhan virus, that's essentially the CCP waging chemical and biological warfare on us,
isn't it? It's war, yeah. And the people don't even talk about it. And that's exactly what I said in the book, that when people think about Soviet Union, Cold War, our number one enemy, but we never even had a battle with the Soviet Union. And people just don't think about it. But when they think about China, they say, they're so-called communists, they're harmless, they never export revolution. Really? We just don't have a good memory. We fought a war in Korea, and my father was there.
Yes.
And it's just, he was there as a reporter. And how many people died? And I think like 300,000 Chinese died, and some 60, 40 or 60 American died. That was a full scale war.
Mm-hmm.
And people just don't remember it. And also Vietnam, you think the Americans were fighting just the Vietnamese in Vietnam? No, 100-some thousand Chinese were sent there throughout the length of the war and fight directly with the Americans. And we had the fentanyl and killed hundreds of thousands of Americans, mostly young Americans. And then COVID. Wuhan COVID,
yes.
Or China COVID, or China virus, exactly. And these are war. Millions by now, if we put all this together, millions, over a million Americans died in the hands of the CCP. And,
wow.
and you tell me they don't export revolution and they're harmless? That's why I believe, especially that's the thing I can do best, is to help people to understand history. History is so important. Without the knowledge of history, I don't think we can understand the present.
And this is why communists and totalitarians always try to disconnect us from the past and make us ignorant about history, because it enables them to control us and manipulate us more. Do you think even the Trump administration is still too willfully blind about the threat of communist China?
No, I think Trump understands it. I also understand that now... we are in the stage that we let the CCP in so much into our nation, into the world order, and you can't just say decap no more, and because that will really harm American people.
Mm-hmm.
So it has to be strategic, but I think he understands it, and I think everything he has done so far, I think. The ultimate goal is to take down the CCP. Everything from Greenland, from Panama, from Venezuela, and I think from Iran, I think the final, his target is the CCP. So we are in the stage that, today, if we just decap, and we probably won't even have enough medicine.
In the book, you also state that the current, and we've touched on this a little bit, but you state that the current Democrat Party has become nearly indistinguishable from the CCP. How so?
You just look at their belief system. and you look at their policies. And so they probably, of course, they don't say that, but it is indistinguishable that they absolutely despise America. They absolutely think that America is systemically racist and evil that need to be overthrown. Mm-hmm. And they believe the tradition has to be canceled out. They believe that our rights are from the government.
Yes.
That alone should qualify them as communists, because that yes. is uttered by my senator from Virginia, Tim Kaine.
Yeah.
And in a hearing just early this year, he said this it's deeply troubling that the extreme radical right think that their rights are from their creator. I was like, really? But then I was shocked? Kind of, but I was not shocked, because that is exactly how the communists think government.
Yeah.
They think the government was the one giving out the rights. When government give you the rights, the government can take away your rights. And that's exactly what happened in China. So now they're worried, but they don't ever say they're communists. Now they're worried that the radical faction call themselves communists, now is taking over the party. I think it's too late, because your party has become a communist party already. Now you're just a little bit worried, not a little bit, they're really worried that mm-hmm. you know, those from New York, they absolutely call themselves communists. And that's no surprise. It's absolutely, there's no surprise.
You are a busy, tireless woman, I know. But do you, and I know this book is just a few months old, but do you have a new book in the works, even if it's just in your head so far?
You ask me, yes. I think there might be something else I want to really talk about. And I'll see. But yes.
You don't have to give that away.
No, I haven't even talked to my publisher, but I do think there's something else. It's so important that I want to write a book about.
Excellent. And I follow you on X, and I know that you're on there. You do quite a bit on social media. What are the ways that people can keep up with what you're writing and thinking?
I think X probably is, to me, that is the best platform. And I tried others, Facebook and Instagram. It's just, I'm just one person thing. One person operation. I said, yes. I just focus on X. And I do more and more videos. And tomorrow, I don't know whether you have noticed, I have been doing a lot of videos on the historical side, especially the signers. And I made a plan to visit the homes of those signers of Declaration of Independence. And tomorrow, I'm going to Pennsylvania and New Jersey. And my plan is to visit them all before 4th of July, but it's not going to happen. But I will continue to do that after the 4th of July this year, and visit every signer's homes. And there's 56 signers, and only some 20 of their homes survived. So, I think that's something I really want to do.
Listeners, pick up a copy of She Van Fleet's important book, Mao's America, and her new one, Made in America. They are great, important reads. She Van Fleet, thanks for coming back to The Right Take. Please keep up the great work.
Thank you so much.
And thank you, listeners, for tuning in. Don't forget to subscribe to The Right Take if you haven't already. And if you like what you hear, please leave that positive review. Be seeing you.